Welcome to Downrange Radio and our ongoing coverage of DC v. Heller, the oral arguments in front of the Supreme Court today on the meaning of the Second Amendment. I'm your host, Michael Bain, and all day long, Downrange Television, www.downrange.tv, and Downrange Radio have been providing coverage and commentary on the oral arguments. You can hear really excellent commentary from Jim Shepard, who was our man on the floor of the Supreme Court today, an interview with John Lott, and coming up, an interview with Dave Koppel. Now, Dave from the Independence Institute in Golden, Colorado, just down the street from us here in our secret hidden bunker in the Rocky Mountains. Dave has been a longtime Second Amendment activist, written some extremely influential commentary on the Second Amendment, was there in Washington. And we thought it would be important to get Dave's take on what's happened today, how he feels coming out of those arguments. So, not the greatest sound quality you're going to hear. He is on the way out of the country, and we had to grab him at an airport with a cell phone. So, here is Dave Koppel from the Independence Institute on DC v. Heller, the oral arguments. I know it's hard to summarize all these oral arguments, everything that went on there in court, but if you could take a stab at it, Dave, where do you think we are?
I think we're on the road to victory. You can't predict what the Supreme Court's going to do, but I'd say the brief on the whole strongly favored the pro-right side of this case, and I think Alan Curran did a magnificent job on behalf of respondent and on behalf of the Second Amendment today. And to the extent that you can make guesses based on the questions the Supreme Court justices were asking, they seem to point towards a solid majority of the court, perhaps six or larger, finding the handgun ban to be a violation of the Second Amendment.
One of the things that really surprised me in listening to the oral arguments was that Justice Kennedy was so vociferous and so quickly speaking out, talking about the second phrase, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, and there'd been a lot of talk that he represented actually a swing vote.
Well, of course, he often is a swing vote, and there have been terms when every time there was a 5-4 case, he was number five in the majority. But this again, I think, vindicates Alan Gurra's approach to the case, where he really saw Justice Kennedy as someone who was strongly in favor of liberty in general, and certainly on First Amendment free speech issues, Justice Kennedy's been one of the strongest votes on the court for the freedom of speech, freedom of press. And I think Justice Kennedy understood that the part of liberty anywhere, but especially in the United States, is the ability to protect yourself in your own home with a firearm.
In several other interviews with people, one of the things that everyone mentioned is that about halfway through the oral arguments, they realized how exceptional it was to see a sitting Supreme Court discuss a constitutional issue that wasn't weighted down with 100, 200 years worth of precedence. And it was a sense of that history was being made here. Is that the same sense that you have?
Certainly. It's in a way, it's a fun case, I think, for the justices and their clerks, exactly because the precedent here is pretty thin. And I think Justice Kennedy even indicated that the main precedent from the last century, United States versus Miller, might have been okay for its time, but they're going to probably substantially clarify or modify that in terms of the Miller test, would being at least arguably readable to say that a machine gun is the gun that's most protected by the Second Amendment. And I think they'll go for something that's more in line with people's common sense, contemporary understandings that the Second Amendment, a machine gun probably isn't protected at all, or to the extent it is, it's at the very periphery. Whereas having a normal handgun in your own home is exactly what the Second Amendment is about.
Well, I know it's been a long haul for you as well, and I also know that you are on the way to Taiwan, I believe it is, correct?
I'm part of an international delegation that's going to observe the free presidential elections there. So I'm going from one Freedom venue to another.
So we have a few months to wait, but on the whole, you come out of that room an optimistic man.
Absolutely. And again, there have been other Supreme Court cases where lawyers I've respected have gone in and said, oh, it's going to come out 9-0 one way, and it actually came out 9-0 the other way. But to the extent you can make any prognostications from what you see, things look good. But it's also really, really important that people understand that the judicial branch is, in general, quite reluctant to overturn legislative judgment. And the fact that the court may well act against the most extreme anti-gun law in the United States does not mean the courts are going to go after the 99% of other laws. People who don't like gun registration laws, gun licensing laws, things like that, bans on much narrower classes of weapons, bans on, say, Saturday Night Special, so-called assault weapons, those issues are still going to be left to the legislatures, and the courts are not going to block legislative decisions. So citizen activism on behalf of Second Amendment rights is going to remain extremely important, because that's where the vast, vast majority of these issues are going to be decided.
So the simple truth is even if the Supreme Court comes back with a very clear ruling in favor of individual rights, that doesn't mean that those of us on the activist side, it doesn't mean that our job is finished. Far from it.
No, it means that we're beginning a new chapter. And it means there's going to be an additional tool in the arsenal to deal with jurisdictions that enforce their licensing laws in very abusive ways and that are arbitrary and capricious and that violate due process. And of course, there's the additional issue, which I don't think this case is going to resolve, is whether the Second Amendment, besides being a limit on the federal government, which includes Washington, D.C., which is purely a creature of Congress, whether the Second Amendment also is even applied to state and local governments, such as the handgun ban in Chicago and four Chicago suburbs. That's going to be resolved in another case in the future. But the reason that we're at a point in our legal culture where the Supreme Court, even taking action against this extremist law that goes from the from gun control into gun prohibition, the reason why even that is now thinkable, that the court might do something, is because of how pro-Second Amendment activists have helped move the culture in this country in a positive direction. I did a post on the Vala Conspiracy weblog yesterday about the New York Times and Gallup polls over the years about public opinion on handgun prohibition. And we've gone from a country that was in the late 50s had a majority in favor of handgun prohibition, and now there's about a 2-to-1 majority against it. That's a key background fact in why the court seems very possible, ready to do the right thing on the Washington, D.C. handgun prohibition. You know, if we lost all those legislative battles and referendum battles, initiative battles, in places like Massachusetts and California, where they had in 1978 and 1982 ballot measures on banning handguns in those states, if we hadn't reacted to the Morton Grove handgun ban and the Washington, D.C. handgun ban by getting good preemption laws in over 40 states to prevent local handgun bans from being enacted, then we wouldn't be where we are today. The court is willing, I think, to say, you know, Washington, D.C. city government, we kind of know that you're not all that confident in what you do, and we maybe don't have a lot of respect for your judgments. But if we had 6 states and 40 cities with handgun bans, it's, I think, almost inconceivable that the court would be willing to overturn that many laws, no matter how persuasive the case we made about the original meaning of the Second Amendment. So all the activism that's gone on over the years is absolutely something that's been a sine qua non, as lawyers say, that without which not. We wouldn't be where we are today if it weren't for all the decades and decades of hard work by Second Amendment activists who are not lawyers.
Dave, I think that's very well put, and I would also like to thank you for the amount of work that you've done here in the activist arena. And good luck over there in Taiwan. We'll let you go ahead and get on the airplane. And remember, be very careful not to drink the water.
As in many cases when traveling, it's just healthier to confine oneself to beer and wine and tea.
Well, I won't lie to you. It has been a long day here at the microphone, but it has been a very good day for freedom. It's been a good day for freedom, and it's been a good day, I think, for America. As I said with Jim Shepherd, there was a point in those hearings where watching the Supreme Court work, I thought, you know, this is America. This is what is good about America. Here's the top court in the land. Here are nine brilliant people with a profound understanding of the law, a profound understanding of what makes us all Americans, of what is different about this country. And they are addressing a fundamental issue. And they are going back to the founders' intent. What did James Madison say? What did Thomas Jefferson say? What was the meaning of the Second Amendment? And it actually sent chills down my spine, because I do truly believe that what is different about America is that we have days like this, that it's not some tin-pot dictator or some court that was appointed last week to rule on laws that were written 3 weeks ago. No, this is the highest court of the land, and they are, as Jim Shepherd said, they're making law here. They're making real law here. So, again, I think it has been an important day for freedom, an important day for all of us who have fought so hard for the Second Amendment for so long, all of us who have been in the activist arena. I know there's a lot of people out there listening who have been fighting this battle along with me for a long time. And I think that David Koppel makes a couple of very, very important points, and that's it. Number one, the battle isn't over. And again, you know, it's going to be June before we get the Supreme Court ruling. And it, you know, it could go completely against us. Stranger things have happened. We don't think it's going to go that way. We all feel pretty good after today. But the battle won't be over. The gun banners won't stop. And I think the true point here is that all of you activists out there, all of you people who wrote letters to the newspaper, who turned out at local meetings, who have fought, at a city level, a regional level, a state level, a national level, for all these years, that's the reason we got to today. And that is, I believe, what makes this a great country, is that the people out there, you guys stand up, because that's what's important. So, again, I am your host, Michael Bain, and after a very profound and moving day, we'll have more commentary for you tomorrow on Wednesday. We'll be talking to David Hardy. We're waiting for David to get to a place where he has a telephone and he can talk to us and do an interview. He is, of course, the creator of the In Search of the Second Amendment documentary and one of the most thoughtful Second Amendment commentators in the world. We'll have him. We'll also hopefully tomorrow be talking to representatives of the National Rifle Association and the National Shooting Sports Foundation, both of whom were instrumental today in their briefs in providing the background that the justices needed. So thank you, as always, so much for joining us, and hey, stay safe out there.